Chapter 10. Jerusha. Mockingbirds quarreling noisily with other birds awakened Charlie at daybreak from a restless sleep. For a time, he was able to put the memory of his disgrace behind him by making plans for his future. He'd go over the mountains and stay there for a while. Then he'd head for the north, someplace where nobody knew him. After a long time, when he was grown up to be a man and no one would recognize him, he'd come back to New York on a visit to Noreen. Yes, he'd grow himself a mustache like Johnny had. That should change his look a lot. That and growing taller, too. Well, in the meantime, he might as well eat some hardtack and have a swig of water and be on his way. Although the Blue Ridge Mountains looked close by to Charlie as he walked along the turnpike road, he soon learned the deceptiveness of distance. Though he walked and walked, they grew nearer only after many miles of effort. He saw a few people in the hamlets he went through. It was as if the people hid from him as he walked past the frame and red brick houses and stores. Dogs barked and followed him for a while, and then were whistled back by someone unseen. Used to the clamor of the city he knew so well, and to Culpeper Camp, Charlie found this eerie. He saw curtains twitch as he passed, so there were people. Why were they weary of a solitary boy? Around mid-morning, Charlie heard the jingling noise of harnesses and the thudding of hoofbeats from behind him. He hurriedly left the road for safety of a ditch a few yards from it. Cavalry. As he peered from behind tall, swaying wildflowers, he saw a troop of gray-coat horsemen pass by at a steady trot. Johnny Rebs out scouting. Charlie heard their leader call a halt just opposite him and talk to some of the troopers behind him. They stopped for a while with the commander, who finally swung his horse about and stared back at the road. Then they all turned their mounts and headed back at the same gate at which they had come. Charlie waited to scramble out of his ditch until they were gone from view, clanking and jingling, around a bend in the road. It was noon when he finally reached the foothills of the mountains. Here the road began to rise. Putting one foot heavily in front of the others, Charlie climbed. This part of Virginia was different from Culpeper and the wilderness. It, too, was wooded, but here the forests were different. Trees he didn't begin to know the names of were massed together under a strange blue haze. Among them were dense thickets of a gray-green laurel, and among the thickets stood beautiful mountain dogwood trees, some still dotted with white blooms. Here, up high, the cool air was tangy with the scent of pine, and there was no trace of the foul smoke of the wilderness fires at all. As he climbed in the late afternoon, Charlie felt the mountains around him. They weren't like the wilderness filled with evil smells and memories, but all the same they were frightening. Their enormous forested bulk, towering over the road on both sides of him as well as ahead and behind, made him feel hemmed in. He sensed that the trees watched him. There was no friendliness coming from them as he'd felt from the trees in Central Park. Here was a waiting, brooding atmosphere. Although he had neither passed nor seen anyone since he began to climb, he felt eyes boring into his back. Whenever he turned his head quickly to look about, he expected to see someone, but he never did. What kinds of wild animals lived up here? He heard noises from the sides of the road at times, but he saw nothing. And then suddenly, as he stopped to rest for a bit, he heard the blast of a horn from somewhere above him. What could this mean? Charlie froze. Some moments afterward, a young man in a big black hat and a tattered gray coat came pelting down the road toward him. As he ran past Charlie, he called out, "The conscriptors have come again. Hide yourself." And the man ran on and darted into laurels on the right side of the road. Conscriptors? What are they? Whatever they were, they had to be dangerous to make somebody so scared. Taking a hint from the ragged man, Charlie plunged into high, thick-growing rhododendrons on the left, crouched down, and waited. Before long, he saw a group of 6 Confederate soldiers come along the road, 1 on horseback, 4 walking. The 6th man, a bearded, blond giant, walked, too, but with his arms bound behind his back. He was scowling as he passed by Charlie's hiding place, going back downhill along the road, back toward the war. Who could he be? He was wearing a gray jacket and butternut brown trousers. Suddenly, Charlie thought he knew who he was, a Johnny Reb deserter caught here in the mountains. Had the tattered men been a deserter, too? Whoever he was, Charlie Quinn didn't want to meet him again. Once the 6th man passed, Charlie worked his way through the rhododendrons. He noticed that there was a path behind the plants and followed it, figuring it would go back to the road he had just left. It didn't. It climbed and twisted and turned along the ridges, with ever-deepening ravines and narrow meadows covered with bluish grass. By sunset, Charlie had no idea where he was. According to the trees he examined for moss, he was going north. So to find the road again, he would have to retrace his steps. But not this day. He couldn't risk falling down a ravine in the darkness. And then, all at once, he saw a little cluster of buildings nestled under tall evergreens in a clearing. The buildings' only vague gray shapes in the hazy dusk were set behind a low, sagging fence. There were only four of them, two large and the others very small. A farm, more than likely. He'd seen farms around Culpeper, so he knew one when he saw it. The bigger building with the stone chimney and the corn crib attached would be the dwelling place, and the other big one the shed. The smaller ones could be hen houses. A hen house. Eggs. He liked eggs. Noreen had made omelets once when he brought home fresh eggs from a street peddler. But how could he get them? He didn't want to go to the door and ask to buy food. Who knew what sort of welcome a Yankee deserter would get? He decided instead to sneak into the hen house, take the eggs, he found, and leave a penny payment in each nest. He'd get away as fast as he could, sleep where he felt it would be safest, and by daybreak be going back down the path to the main road. What he had to do right now was wait till it was full dark. Then he'd circle around the house to the woods behind it and work up unseen to the hen house. But was there a dog around? He had to find that out. But how? Silas would have known. A hot flood of shame came over Charlie at this thought of his friend. Oh, Silas! Shaking off his feeling of guilt, Charlie picked up a small stone at his feet and hurled it against the shed. As he heard it hit, he flung himself full length into the tall grass and waited. No dog barked. Nothing at all happened, except that the front of the house opened for an instant, then swiftly closed. No one called out, but now a light showed in the window that had been dark before. Somebody lived here, but at least there was no dog to reckon with. As Charlie waited for darkness, he took the last fragments of hardtack from his pocket and ate them, licking the crumbs from the palm of his hand. Then he got to his feet and ran for the fence, put both hands on it, and vaulted over. It was so old and ill-kept that it almost collapsed under him. He'd have to go over it more carefully with the fragile eggs. He worked his way as silently as possible around to the side of the house where the coop was located. Stepping gingerly over the soft earth, he reached the coop and was about to lift its latch when all of a sudden he heard a ferocious hissing, followed by a loud honking and the rustling clatter of wings. A moment later, a door opened nearby, and his eyes were struck by the yellow light of a lantern. Over the honking and hissing, a harsh voice rang out, "Stand where you are, boy, or I'll shoot ya." "Shoot?" Charlie's hand fell at once from the latch. He cried out, "I only came for eggs. I was going to pay for them." "Ha!" The laughter was as harsh as the voice. Then whoever it was commanded, "Stop that there ruction, Melindy. Ya, boy, don't move at all." Charlie stood motionless while the kerosene lantern was set down on a bench on the back porch of the cabin. Silhouetted in front of its light were the black figures of a large goose and a tall person in a shirt and trousers who held the longest pistol Charlie had ever seen. An old flintlock, it was larger than cavalrymen carried. Who was his captor this time? "Who'd you be?" demanded the voice. "Charlie," Charlie stammered. "Charlie what?" "Charlie Skedaddle." This made the person laugh. "Skedaddle's a good name for the likes of ye. I never seen ye before, and I know just about everybody hereabouts. So you must come from down yonder. Do you be an outlander, boy?" "Yes, sir, I guess I am." "Why'd you come here?" "To get some eggs. I'm hungry." "Why didn't ye hello the house and ask me for 'em?" Charlie hung his head. What should he say now? He was a Union Army deserter in the mountain of a Confederate state. "Why not ask me for 'em?" his captor repeated. "Are ye a soldier?" "No," Charlie shook his head. "Yes, you'd be too small for that. You talk queer, I'd say. You ain't from Virginia. Where do you come from?" Charlie sighed. "New York City, mister." "I ain't no mister. My name's Jerusha Bent." "Jerusha?" Charlie had never heard the name before. "And these parts, that's a name for women folks. I'm Granny Jerusha Bent. A man would be called Jerusalem." Charlie goggled at her. "A woman in breeches? Yet with such a Bible-sounding name, there ought to be hope." He asked, figuring the big woman would be generous. Will you let me have some eggs if I give you a penny each for them? Again, the laughed. That's a mighty handsome price, but they ain't for sale. Then, to Charlie's huge relief, the long pistol was set on the bench beside the lantern. Now the tall woman said, I figure you to be a deserter from the Yankee army. I've been thinking on where you say you come from. I heard it said New York was way up in the north. Are you from the Yankee army that's down in the bluegrass country now? Charlie sighed in his unhappiness. Yes. A deserter, then? Yes. You ran away from a fight. Charlie nodded. To his surprise, the woman didn't show disgust. But then, maybe she was used to deserters. Perhaps there were other Union Army deserters here in these mountains, men he could join up with. His hopes rose. Are there other men like me here, Miss Bent? It's just Granny Bent, and no, there ain't no men like you here. What lets you call yourself a man, a runty boy like you are? These hills are for the South. Yankee deserters who get cotched here don't live to tell it. I ought to shoot you down here where you are. I ought to shoot you down where you are. Charlie tensed himself to run, but Granny Bent didn't reach for a pistol. Instead, she folded her arms and said, Come closer, don't you be scared. I don't aim to shoot you. Slowly, Charlie stepped forward to the edge of the porch. From there, he said, I saw Reb deserters here today. I don't suppose you'd shoot one of them. The woman sniffed. If he come here after my eggs, I would. She bent over to pat the goose's sleek head. Melindy would let you know if anybody came too close, like she did with you. Melindy would let me know if anybody came too close, like she did with ya. Better than any hound, that's my Melindy. There are Confederate deserters here. About the most of 'em came from here in the first place. They got weary of the war and come home. Their folks hide 'em. They're lucky, said Charlie bitterly. How old are you? I'm almost 13. Where are your folks? I only have my sister. She's up in New York City. No pa, no ma? No. No cousins or uncles or other kin? No, they're all in Ireland. I know of that, and Scotland, too, over the seas. Suddenly Charlie felt his knees weakening. He said, I got to sit down, and sank onto the porch at the woman's bare feet. This was the signal for the goose to come out of him, hissing, beating her wings, making Charlie lift his arms to protect his face from her beak. Get off him, Melindy! Shoo! Old Jerusha bent down, swatted the goose with her broom beside the door, making it flutter down off the porch. She shouted after the bird, He ain't worth peckin'. No Yankee deserter is. The woman paused to watch the goose flap away, then fold her wings. Now, she asked, Puny as you are, what'd the Yankees want with you? They made a drummer boy out of me, Charlie said softly. In spite of his fear, he felt shame as he said it. And you say you run from the fightin' down below? Yes, at the Wilderness. I seen it. That's a bad place. It's witched, I'd say. The woman was silent for a long moment, then all at once asked, Are you hungry? I said I was. I'll pay you for any food you'll sell me. No, you won't. It ain't your money I want, Mr. Skedaddle. Come inside and set. If it's eggs you come after, it's eggs you'll get. Charlie got up. He waited until Granny Bent put her pistol under her arm, took the lantern, and opened her back door. Then he followed her inside. In the glow of the hearth fire, he saw a large woman with wild gray hair streaked with black. Her face was brown, wrinkled as a nut meat, and her eyes black, sharp, and fierce-looking. Her shirt was blue calico, and her overalls a faded deeper blue. Suddenly she grinned. Her teeth were white and strong, with spaces between them. Red hair and blue eyes. You've got spirit, even if you ain't got grit. That means I got to watch you good, don't I? Why watch me? Asked Charlie. Why watch you? To keep you handy. I told you it wasn't your money I wanted, it's yourself. I need a boy here to help me out, and it appears to me you've been sent to Granny Jerusha because she needs you. Me and Melindy'll keep good watch over you. I wouldn't try to run away if I was you. The way you talk, mountain folks would guess you from a Yankee, and it'd go hard for you. But as long as you stay here, they won't come meddle with you. Nobody bedevils a wise woman in the hills. What's a wise woman? A part Indian doctor woman and a baby bringer. Some say I cast spells, too. Jerusha Bent chuckled and added softly, Some'll name you a witch boy, but once they know you'll belong to me, you'll be safe enough. Never you fear. If your Yankees come seeking you coward of a boy, I'd hide you from 'em. You know, y'all be best off with me while the war's happening below. One peep out of your mouth will be enough to put an end to you. I'm saving your skin if you don't have the wits to know it yet. They'd shoot you down if they could get the matter out of what you say. You ain't so easy to understand, boy. Angry at this old woman's ways, Charlie flared. If everybody here hates Yankees so much, why don't you shoot me now? Jerusha Bent's dark eyes gleamed. I've been other places than these hills, boy. I got my reasons not to shoot you, and they're good ones. Now, there's water over yonder in the jug. That round water carrier you got on you marks you as a Yankee. Get it off now and give it to me. I'll bury it in the morning. Once you've had water, wash your hands and face before you eat. And be sure to use the lye soap. Boy, there's a rag on the nail beside the jug to wipe yourself with. If you wonder what to call me, Granny or Ma'am will do. Charlie had listened carefully to her talk and wondered if she was crazy. Did she even realize what she was saying about spells and witch boys? He'd better be careful. Trying to humor her, Charlie asked, Are you really an Indian? I didn't say I was. Don't you listen? I said I'm part Indian, one quarter Creek. Remember that. I can tell what you're thinking and track you wherever you aim to run. The wise woman does the first part, the Creek does the second, and I ain't one bit crazy like you're thinking this very minute, boy. Skedaddle.